The Fontainebleau Hotel is a famous landmark in Miami Beach, Florida. Since its opening in 1954, it has been used for recording films such as Bond's Goldfinger and The Bodyguard starring Whitney Houston, and TV shows such as The Sopranos. It has also been host to famous boxing matches such as on the 29th of January 1977 when Roberto Duran retained his WBA World Lightweight title. But our interest this week is not in the hotel, but with the founders of the hotel's widow and son, and how a prenuptial agreement led to at least six TV shows and a film being made about two murders. This is the case of Bernice and Ben Novak Jr., and this is Murder Me on Monday.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Murder Me Monday podcast. I'm Cameron, and joined with me is Mother.
Hello.
I got back late last night, so I'm going to be quiet on this one, I'm going to be honest.
Mother. It sounds like I've got Barry White here with me, not Cameron. But
I got my sexy deep radio voice. Right, take away. Talk.
Right, so before we get into this week's episode, I wanted to say a huge thank you to a listener who alerted me to a development involving Ian Stewart, the subject of our episodes 1 and 50. I know you've all listened, so I don't need to do a recap on those.
You can find it on your preferred podcast platform. Man, I have a sexy voice right now, don't I?
Seems although Ian muttered about an appeal for Helen Bailey's murder, he never filed anything. But he has filed an appeal for the murder of his wife, Diane Stewart. Now, that appeal filing had been missed by all my usual sources at the time of writing this, and it's actually due to be heard at the Royal Courts of Justice, on the 4th of May, 2022. So guess who's got that one diarised?
And that was the episode 50 that we did?
Yes.
Okay.
So complete side note, I actually found the sentencing remarks from the judge on Helen's case by accident. Oh, my researching skills have gotten better over the last year. And he got me wondering, why is he appealing Diane's case? In Helen's case, the judge dismissed a possible appeal of the length of the sentence he was about to impose with any attempt by citing a similar case, and said it had similarities but not the facts, which is why he was able to impose a minimum sentence of 35 years, meaning Ian would be 90 when he got out. So I got to wondering, as I'm apt to do, why would he appeal Diane's case? It would achieve nothing in the light of the sentence of his current one for Helen. Money? We know from his behaviour that's his primary driver. Would it mean that he could keep everything from Diane's estate if he won the appeal?
Would that still be his driving factor now, even though he's in prison?
I believe so.
And he can't use the money?
I believe so. He can use it for all sorts of things. There's commissaries and things like that. And
they kept those, though.
Yeah, but I believe it's his driver. That's all he lives for. But it's possible it's about family, proving to his sons that he didn't murder their mother. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. A moral view instead, or a moral victory that he wants.
Yeah. So questions. Who is paying for that appeal? And is that insurance policy for his illness still paying out when he's in prison?
Where was that acquired? Was it through his work?
Well, yes. And it was a very old policy that obviously didn't have a lifespan to it. And I can't imagine such an insurance policy would have a clause in it that would said, we won't pay out if you're imprisoned. I've got no idea, but
I know a lot of sponsors have a morality clause. If you do something bad and you're sponsored by them, it looks bad on the brand, they get rid of you. But his insurance thing, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I guess we'll probably end up doing a mini-sode update on this one, and I'll drop the links to this new information in this show notes under a separate heading for anybody who wants to hear them. I've also got another small update to what was episode 3. Do you remember that far back, Cameron? Sophie Lancaster.
Yes, I do.
Yes.
That's a stamping out. Was that stamp?
Yes, you're right.
Prejudice, hate, intolerance everywhere.
Yes, yes.
I remember that. Right. I don't remember what the case we did last week was, but I remember that acronym.
Yeah. Well, do you remember the two lads that were a very prominent part of the gang that were responsible for Sophie's death? One of them ended up, he's gotten into a lot of trouble since he's been in prison, and his sentence has been extended, and he's been diagnosed with all sorts of mental illnesses. But one of the other lads, he didn't have a good start. He was only 16. He was Ryan Herbert. And at the time, it was unusual that his name was released. when he gets into the prison system, he's obviously in the juvenile system, and it doesn't go too well for him. He gets in bits and bobs of trouble as his want, because he's probably, as we know, surrounded by like-minded people. But when he gets himself into the adult system, he gets himself straightened out, and he's done really, really well, apparently. It's one of these, what you would hope rehabilitation would prove, and we hope he stays on the track. He's got himself a much higher education. It's to a degree level. The parole board has said that he's made such significant changes to his life that his insight has increased his maturity, and he's been released on parole. So he's done 14 years, is it now? Something like that. So it's, yeah, there's hope for him yet. So fingers crossed he stays out of trouble.
Yeah, it's good. That's kind of a
positive bit, yeah.
Yeah.
So let's crack on with Bernice and Ben Novak Jr. This was a highly publicised trial in the USA, but not so much in the UK, which is probably why it passed me by. I am sure I've not seen any of the many TV shows, such as 48 Hours or Snapped, and I sure haven't seen the film about the case starring the rather delectable Rob Lowe, mainly because it's a Lifetime movie and these things give me toothache, they're so sweet. It was called Beautiful and Twisted, if anybody wants to go hunting it down, and there's a multitude of books being written about the case. Let's start with that hotel. It's big. 1,250 rooms is the most usual quote. Some places say 1,500 rooms. It was actually built...
What? Wait, what? 250 yeah. to 1,500?
1,250 to 1,500.
Oh, I had 250. Okay. That's a big difference. Yeah, yeah, carry on.
It's actually built on the old estate of the Firestone Tyre family. There's many famous people associated with it, such as Frank Sinatra and Marilyn Monroe. Got a fascinating history if you want to look back through it. All the Rat Pack stuff and all the elite names. The main man behind this enterprise was Ben Novak Sr., a child of Russian emigres, anglicised his name a bit from Novik, started out as a haberdasher, went broke a few times, moved, bought rundown hotels.
Was a haberdasher?
Clothes. It wasn't a suit maker. He would buy and sell bolts of cloth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't act like that. Don't act like I would know what that means.
Yeah.
What's a haberdasher?
Yeah. Haberdashery. When a lady wants certain ribbons or pieces of lace, they would go to a haberdashery. So, yeah. So he moved and bought rundown hotels and went broke again, but turned things around, and eventually he buys that Firestone mansion in 1952 for $2.3 million, which would be about $24.5 million of today's money.
Was that a loan or did he...
Okay,
you'll get into it. I'm wondering, because if he can afford that back then, he's already rolling and he's doing pretty well.
No, he couldn't afford it. There's a lot of talk about seniors stitching people up with all sorts of dodgy deals, including his siblings, brothers. The mob is mentioned in a few places. But he was determined to make it big, and he did for a while. There was loans coming out of his ears. All sorts of business partners. He ran off business partners. He doesn't come out of it very particularly nice. He marries twice. The first marriage, they adopt a son, but divorce in 1951 as he is having an affair. And in 1952, he marries Bernice, the one he'd been having the affair with, who was a model, a real one. She'd done work for Coca-Cola and posed for Salvador Dali, the painter. But Bernice had been married too. She'd been having an affair. She was married to a soldier. She managed to get an annulment, and it was all happily ever after when in 1956, Bernice gave birth to their son, Ben Jr. In some places, the family are described as Miami royalty, and I guess in a way they were. Very well to do, highly connected, lived it very large, very flashy. Ben Jr. is often called the heir to the legendary Fontainebleau Hotel, but he isn't, as the hotel goes bust in 1977.
Has it been remodeled or redone since?
It's been bought and resold a number of times. It's been remodeled. It's been broken up. It's been put back together. It's still in operation.
Because I Googled it when you were talking. That's a massive hotel.
Yeah.
We've stayed at some like pretty nice places over the years, whatever. But that is a huge hotel. It's obnoxiously large. And yeah. Okay.
You can see where it's been film sets.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So as I said, the hotel goes bust in 1977. But Senior, like all ruthless businessmen, wasn't completely broke personally, but he didn't have a lot. When Daddy dies in 1985 of heart and lung failure, age 78, he leaves most of the money to Junior, not much to his wife Bernice, who was only 64. His first adopted son, he leaves him $1. That's significant, and I'll explain that one at the end. Junior is 29 when Senior passes. He takes that money that he's been left, and after growing up in a hotel, he knows what makes a good conference or convention. So he sets up a business running these. It's big business in the USA, these things. At the age of 35, he is considered to be quite a catch amongst the ladies in Miami. He's a world-renowned collector of Batman memorabilia and actually owned a replica Batmobile. Not sure that that would impress the ladies much as he thought it, but still. He also liked a comic book as well, and apparently would carry around large sums of cash, up to something like $100,000, to meet with traders and buy rare collectible copies. Anyway, Junior also has a taste for the ladies, especially strippers and sex workers. Somehow or another, one of them convinces him to marry her in 1990 and look after her and her daughter from a previous marriage, Ecuadorian-born Narcisa Sierra Veliz Pacheco, known as Narcy. Junior loved his wife's daughter May. She was around 15 or 16 when he became her stepdad, and he was very good to her. She eventually goes on to have two children of her own, and he treats those as his own grandchildren. She's significant in this story also. Junior and Narcy didn't exactly live a normal life. The elite never do they? There are records of many police calls at call-outs to their home, but one particular one on 2002 stood out. Fort Lauderdale police turn out and find Junior has been bound, gagged and held hostage by several men at the direction of his wife until police arrived 24 hours after he'd first been tied up. In the process, $370,000 of cash and goods were stolen from the house. Charges were never filed. Narcy attributed the incident to their bizarre sex life. He said it was an extortion attempt.
Is the extortion attempt on behalf of her or from these like seven men that were apparently part of some sort of sexcapade?
Yeah, he at the time says it's Narcy trying to get money out of him. But so there's never any charges filed. And a few days later, they filed for divorce. But they ended up staying together, probably because Narcy remembered that she'd signed a prenup, which would actually only give her $65,000 if they're divorced, and that's a drop in the ocean to these people. Narcy claimed that at one point, Junior had broken her nose and had sent her to a plastic surgeon to get it fixed. When she woke up, she said she found new breast implants had been done as well. She had known nothing about it. I've heard this kind of rubbish before, so who knows if it's true. By 2009, Junior and Narcy's marriage was in deep trouble.
Wasn't she some sort of sex worker escort?
She'd been a stripper.
Yeah, and I mean, when you go, so yes, she was.
Yeah.
You don't just go for a stripper for these like socialite rich people and be like, oh, I'm only going to strip. No, you earn bank for having sex with them.
It gets worse. So I said, 2009, Junior.
Today, Junior. Carry on.
2009, Junior and Narcy's marriage was in deep trouble. Seemed Junior was cut from the same cloth as his dad and was having affairs all over the place. One of these affairs, which was with what has been described as a porn star, started out as a pay for whatever. But it became eventually so serious, Narcy tried to buy her off $10,000, but that didn't work. Narcy was furious and scared Junior was going to divorce her to live with the porn star. After living the high life with Junior for 19 years, she wasn't willing to go back to being broke in her mid-50s due to that prenup. And it's not like she could take stripping up again in her 50s, could she?
I don't know. She got some new titties. She might be able to. Do you know what I mean? Like...
No, I don't know whether she kept them or not. Anyway.
I don't understand how these people that have been married to these hyper wealthy rich people and have these connections for 19 years, how they don't have a private, not private business, but a private access themselves into money. You would be with them. Surely you've got access to funds yourself.
People don't think that far ahead, I don't believe.
I would. You always stuff something away, don't you? I would.
Logic would think that you would, but I know most people don't. You don't have that runaway fund, which is what you'd probably be looking for. Narcy even tried calling this porn star's landlady, telling her that Junior wouldn't be paying the starlet's rent anymore, and, well, you better go ahead and evict her. The landlady just ignored Narcy. By this point in 2009, Junior's business is turning over $50 million. But his personal wealth only stood at somewhere, this is disputed, between 4 and 10 million. But it's not to be sniffed at.
And I wouldn't trust those anyway.
No. Narcy wanted it all. She couldn't risk a divorce just to get that $65,000. So alternative action had to be taken. She had two problems, actually. Not just Junior, but her mother-in-law, Bernice. They didn't get along either. And at one point, Bernice had accused Narcy of trying to poison her.
I could see why she doesn't like him. His mother doesn't like Narcy.
Yeah.
Because she was this sex worker, got her claws stuck in and married him, and then sort of. And then he wasn't just a stepdad, he was a dad that stepped up and then sort of was a pretty good dad, apparently, to the children, or the child, and then the grandchildren.
Yeah, exactly. So, whether Narcy did try and poison Bernice or not, who knows? It's true or throwaway remark, you know, oh my God, that coffee's foul, are you trying to poison me, sort of thing. It's a good narrative for the TV shows anyway. Ben Jr., being wealthy, had a will. And that will appointed Bernice, his mother, as executor and what is described as a curator. That will stipulated that Bernice would receive $200,000 in cash plus $2,500 per month, though Narcy would get the balance and the bulk of her husband's property and money. Bernice, who was 87, as a curator, would have had exercised great control over the purse strings. She could have stopped Narcy doing a lot of stuff she wanted to do. And remember, they don't like each other. And I said, Cameron asked the question, we know very little about Narcy's background, but we do know that she had a sister and a brother called Cristobal. And it's him she turns to for help with a problem with Junior. Cristobal, in turn, talks to a couple of chaps called Alejandro Garcia and Joel Gonzalez, and they come up with a solution to Narcy's problem. We don't know what Bernice was doing between 1985, when Senior died, and 2009, when this all takes place, but by then she is living down in Fort Lauderdale, still has all her fancy gowns from the heyday of the hotel, but lives a very quiet life in a house that Ben Jr. had bought for her. As I said, she's 87 years old. She's still sprightly. She's still driving. When, on the evening of the 5th of April 2009, she'd left her car in the driveway and decided she needs to put it in the garage for the night. Probably some homeowner's rules or something. She pops out in her nightwear. Who's going to see or care? And it's a 2-minute job to put the car away. What she didn't know was that Alejandro was hiding next to the garage, and she can't have seen him. And he used that opportunity of her moving her car to follow her into the garage rather than having to break into the house to do what he'd been hired to do. According to him, later testimony, the plan had been to hit Bernice in the teeth and give her a good beating. You cannot give someone that age much more than a slap and it could kill them. So I'm okay. What he did do is overkill, in my opinion. It's a daft phrase, but you get my drift. Why hit her in the teeth? What would that do? I don't get the rationale and I don't understand why I'm trying to ask.
I mean, she's 80 odd, they're not her teeth anyway.
Probably not. Oh, and again, according to later testimony from him, he had actually drunk 2 bottles of rum to get the courage up to do this. 2 bottles. The rest of us have been rolling in the gutter. I've been half a bottle, or is that just me?
We've done hitmen cases twice in a row, at least. Why are all of them incompetent at the job that they're doing? You're a hitman. Don't get pissed up beforehand.
Well, they're not a hitman, are they?
They're being hired to be.
Yeah.
Don't get pissed up beforehand.
Yeah.
I'm stupid. I wouldn't do that. Let's be fair. When I used to work shifts, I'd be really bored by myself. You know the TV show Dexter?
Yes.
He always plans how he's going to kill people. And I'd be like, how would I kill people? And I know. I'm like, I know their routine. And I'm like, I'd get them when they go out. And I sort of based it off of Dexter.
No, you're on a watch list. So Bernice opens the car door and starts to get out. Alejandro has a monkey wrench to hand. No idea if he grabbed it or brought it with him. He hits her in the head, and of course she starts screaming and falls back into the car, and he carries on hitting her. Then he runs away thinking job done. Bernice is not dead. She manages to pull herself out of the car, goes through the garage and into the house to try and clean the blood off herself. Obviously, she's in major shock. The pictures I've seen show blood all over the bathroom and a kitchen. She collapses in what is described as a laundry room and is found the next day by Junior. She's drenched in blood and it's smeared everywhere in the car, the garage, all over the house. Head wounds bleed a lot. I can testify to that one. She's obviously dead by this point. An autopsy showed that her teeth were broken. So they must have been her own teeth, not falsies, Cam, along with a finger, and that her skull had been cracked. Fort Lauderdale police.
What happened with a finger?
A finger was broken. She probably put a hand up.
Sorry, the way that you said that is, I got confused there. I'm like, where'd they find the finger? But it was attached. Okay. Yeah.
Fort Lauderdale police and the Broward medical examiner, however, ruled the death as an accident, theorising that she died from a fall. We've actually come across Broward County medical examiners before, haven't we? They're not particularly... So that coroner was the one who was also involved in the Anna Nicole Smith case and was widely respected. But the police hadn't thought it was a murder, so no DNA, no evidence was gathered, and although relatives asked the police to investigate, they were ignored. Junior is suspicious over the death of his mother.
I was going to ask about Ben, because he knows that his wife, or soon-to-be ex-wife, is not going to get any money. Surely like a prenup does sort of incentivize the other person to kind of kill you a little bit, because they're not going to get any money from the breakup, and they're like, well, I want money, so I'm going to kill you.
Well, it's like these ones that after 10 years, you get more money. So, all right, I'll hang the marriage out for 10 years.
That's the trade-off you get for these kind of marriages, though, isn't it? You know what you're there for. You're there to be that this older businessman that has a shitload of money, and you're the young like tart that just kind of looks good. And then you're with them for a while, then you've sort of lived your purpose, here's some money. That you know the transaction.
Trophy wife, yes.
Yeah, yes. You know the transaction here. Stop being silly. So that's why the prenup thing is kind of weird. I'm like, okay, I'd want X amount of money at the end of this.
I think they're difficult. I think they're really... I can understand why people want them, but I can see the problem with them as well. They're trying to protect their assets, but yeah. As I said, Junior's suspicious about what's happened to his mum, but he's got nothing to go on to prove it, that it wasn't an accident. I would have hoped that a second private forensic pathologist would have found tool marks on Bernice's head, but nobody seems to have actually asked for that at that point. But Narcy's just removed one obstacle to getting her hands on his money. So one of Junior's biggest clients at the time was Amway. And they do love a convention. And Junior was a very hands-on type of business owner. And on the 12th of July 2009, he was at the Hilton Hotel in Rye Brook, which is Westchester County, New York, setting up a huge convention. And Narcy had accompanied him on that trip. Now, anybody in hospitality knows that far more happens overnight on these kind of things than it does during the day. And Junior, no doubt his team, worked through the night to get the convention ready for the next day. Ben gets to bed around 6:30 a.m. to get some sleep before he'll probably be needed out on the floor to ensure the smooth running of it from behind the scenes. And this is where some of the details are a bit odd to me. Alejandro and Joel are from Miami. The reports say that Cristobal, which is Narcy's brother, drives them to where Junior and Narcy are staying. And I did Google that. No, it wasn't Google actually, but never mind. That's roughly 1,300 to 1,400 miles, depends which route you go. And it would have taken about 19 hours of driving. 7 a.m., 30 minutes after Junior gets to bed. He is awoken by being beaten around the head with dumbbells by Alejandro and Joel after Narcy lets them into the hotel suite.
His phrasing is being woken up by being clapped upside their head with some dumbbells. You know, yeah. It's not so much being woken up, is it?
No. I'm pretty sure you can ask me about the dumbbells, the where, the how and the why, because you don't normally have dumbbells lying around your hotel suite, do you? But it seems these hitmen stopped off on the way to the murder. And they are actually on record as buying them. The details are so specific, they are described as one pink and one blue dumbbell.
Why dumbbell?
I've got...
Surely there could have been anything better. Like, I don't know, a hammer? You twist him over the head with a hammer, he's not going to accidentally wake up. You hit him with a dumbbell, maybe. Well, to be fair, we not mentioned it, but that guy that dropped the 25-kilo plate on that guy didn't bench at the gym.
Oh, I've watched that so many times.
And then he acts like he rolled his ankle. That guy's got anxiety and PTSD from it, the guy that survived.
Yeah.
Yeah. The guy only got sentenced, I think he's out now because he got like a 19-month suspended sentence, got out early. Yeah. So that guy's out, which is mad.
Yeah, it's one of those ones you watch it in almost forensic slow motion to actually try and see the moment, you know, did his ankle rotten yet?
When I'm at the gym and if I'm benching and there's people behind me, I'm like, piss off, move, get out of the way. I would tell people to move if they're too close on bench because you kind of have to because you get dropped on your fucking head.
But that was like 4:30 in the morning or something ridiculous that
yeah.
wasn't it? Yeah. There's yeah. only the two of them in the gym. So Junior's laying in bed getting slapped around the head by these dumbbells and he's obviously screaming and trying to fight back. Narcy gives the two hitmen a pillow to try and smother him or shut him up because he's screaming. They manage to incapacitate him enough where they bound his arms and legs with duct tape and they wrapped his mouth so tightly with the tape that he choked on his own vomit. According to Alejandro, Narcy told him to finish the job by gouging out Junior's eyeballs with a knife. Why is it always the eyeballs we come back to?
Doesn't it have certain messages depending on your culture?
I've not looked into that. Now you've said it, too late.
I mean, it must do. Because in certain cultures, they put coins over the eyes and stuff, don't they? And they respect them in terms of...
Yeah, that's to pay the ferryman, yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean, in certain cultures, like the eyes are like fairly important, aren't they? They're like, yeah. They're like the way that you see through the world.
Yeah, but they remove his eyes with what's described as a utility knife. So Narcy leaves the room after giving them the instructions and is seen on CCTV. So the time varies where you read this, whether it's 7 a.m. or 7:15. She goes to breakfast and that's cold, no matter how much you hate someone. She goes back to the room, finds Ben Jr. and calls security. Police arrive on the scene and that's recorded at 7:57 a.m. Of course, Narcy is the one that police want to talk to. They have all the questions. The police soon realised that the key card lock that is in use in most hotels now had not been used by anyone else after she'd left the room. So it led the police to believe that Narcy had let the guys into the room. They didn't seem to have it on video of the guys coming up to the hotel room. I've got no idea why. So Narcy, who spoke to the police for over 12 hours following the murder, told the police that her husband was a hard person, a strong businessman who had a tendency to make people angry. So she's setting the scene for a business rival or dispute being behind his murder. It's true, he wasn't universally liked, but wealthy people often don't get to be that way without stepping on a few toes. Obviously, she isn't exactly distraught. So police ask her to take a polygraph, and she does. Fails it miserably. They don't arrest her. They have no evidence yet. But she's firmly in their sights at this point. On July the 16th, 4 days after the murder, the police searched the Novak family home. 2501 Delmar Place, Fort Lauderdale. It's a two-storey, 6,000 square foot residence with six bedrooms and sits on half an acre of land. It's located in the Seven Isles neighbourhood and the home is said to have looked like a mini resort to the police detectives. During the execution of the search warrant, the police officers secured security footage of the house, various paperwork, several computers, copies of the bills, the phone book, day planner, and five rolls of duct tape. A few clues were revealed in the search of the hotel room where he was murdered. That pointed to an inside job and not a botched robbery. For one thing, the Rolex that Ben was wearing had not been taken, but it was found in a pool of blood. And yet, investigators had also discovered that a gold bracelet with Ben spelt out in diamonds on it that Junior never took off was missing.
That's a bit garish, isn't it?
Yeah.
A gold bracelet with Ben written on it.
In diamonds, yeah. Also found at the crime scene was a piece of plastic from a pair of knockoff Versace sunglasses. Later, investigators said that Narcy had claimed the glasses were her, which raised the police's suspicion. I mean, these people are wealthy. There's no way in hell would they have had knockoffs now, would they? Narcy doesn't hang about. She starts liquidating assets, cleared out safety deposit boxes, and her daughter May is alarmed and then furious when on 14th of July, which is 2 days after the murder, Narcy and her daughter had a vicious fight in which May said her mother slapped her and then hit her with a crowbar. These people seem to have a lot of tools lying about. Police are called. Nothing comes of it.
That's a fucking leap, isn't it?
Yeah.
You have an argument. Like, you and I have had arguments, but we don't, like, usually resort to violence with crowbars.
But I don't even... We haven't got one, apart from anything else.
I mean, that's besides the point, but that'll make it hard. But to say you hit someone with a crowbar based on an argument from that point, your dad has basically died.
Yes.
And then your mum's just, like, hooning all the gear that he's got to get some money from it. At no point has she done anything that doesn't look mad suspicious.
No. Yeah.
Do better.
Mm. Well, May tries to get Junior, her stepdaddy's body, released so she could arrange burial. But as Nasty was next of kin, she wouldn't allow it, and her lawyer just stalled.
Do you know if he formally adopted her?
No, I don't know that. I would have... I don't know.
Because that does change things, doesn't it, if you're formally adopted?
Yes, but Nasty would have still been his primary... Yeah,
possibly, yeah. But then you get like certain arguments and like contention can happen because of the... Yeah. You're then like legally their daughter. Do you have any information on the relationship between the dad?
May's dad.
Yeah.
No, we know nothing about him.
Okay.
Don't even know if Nasty knew. Well, no, there had been. It was said it was a previous marriage.
Okay.
May's surname is not the same as Nasty's was.
Okay. Yeah. I just wondered if there was a connection or any information.
Mm. So May then filed a lawsuit to prevent her mother from taking over the estate under what's called slaver statute. So it's basically the person behind the crime can't benefit. May was absolutely convinced that her own mother had killed her stepfather. February 2010, the case file was 4 inches thick. Its contents filled of accusations of infidelity. There was theft. And of course, May thinks her mum killed her dad. The judge dismissed the lawsuit.
One sec. What was their sex thing with seven guys?
What?
She said it was a sex thing way back again when he got tied up and extorted for money.
Oh, yes. Where the,
what was that? What could that possibly
role
be?
Role play?
Nah, but I mean, you don't need seven people.
You're
like, do you know what's going to really give me a bonus? Six didn't do it for me. I need seven. Bam. And then to say there's infidelity, well, what were those seven guys going to do? It was either to you or to him at some point. So you're kind of okay with it. You were like a sex worker, sure. That doesn't mean you can't, you should have a proper relationship. And then he goes off with a porn star. I'm like, this feels fucky to me.
Oh, it's going to get even weirder.
It's all over the place.
It's going to get weirder, I can tell you.
Okay.
The lawyers for May asked for, if they were going to dismiss it without prejudice, since Nasty hadn't actually been charged with any crime, and that reserved the right to bring a new suit if Nasty was indicted for it.
What was the time span between his mother dying and him?
It was a couple of months. She died in April or July. Yeah, well, hold on.
But that must raise a flag. I know you're going to talk about it, Mother, but this is the point of a podcast. I'm the voice of a listener. You may then say, yes. I want to ask.
Yes, there are suspicions. It's like, there wasn't only just family. There wasn't only Junior himself that was suspicious. There were actually other people that were on this. So I don't have the finer details of why that case was dismissed or what Nasty tried to do after the dismissal. I just know why May tried this tactic. The bulk of Junior's money would actually pass to May's adult son if Nasty wasn't allowed to collect under that slaver statute. So obviously May's been talking to the police as well. She loved Junior. She wanted to see justice served. Obviously didn't help. She didn't get on with her mother at all. But so have other people. And there's even mention an anonymous letter which had some interesting insight to authorities about who's involved in this conspiracy. It was written in Spanish, apparently, and according to the police, they believed the person that had written this was very heavily influenced by religion, as in guilt and finding this murder was problematic for them. But they didn't know. It was anonymous. So things are further complicated by the involvement of the FBI due to this crossing of state lines from Miami to New York and such like. But the FBI's involvement means that there's a lot more resources which can be thrown at the case. When on July the 2nd, 2010, almost exactly a year after the murder of Junior, the FBI releases a statement and an indictment for the arrest of Nasty, Cristobal, the hitmen, and two others. I won't get into them, but one turns out to be Cristobal's son-in-law and the other one was the son-in-law's cousin. Talk about keeping it all in the family.
Was the confession guilt letter thing from them?
No, it was just an anonymous letter. No, it wasn't, but there is a link.
I think it's from those guys because obviously being
no,
like...
No, it wasn't.
Is it not?
No.
Oh, I'm wrong. Never mind then.
Yeah. But some people hadn't forgotten about Bernice's death, including one reporter who had folders and folders of information, had been frantically trying to get the police to take notice of her. The police had even called her editor at the newspaper to try and get her to back off. And I think she's one of the ones who's actually written a book about this case. She was absolutely convinced it was murder. It paid off in the end, as a few days after their arrest for Junior's murder, they were also arrested for the murder of Bernice. 2012, the circus rolls into town when Narcia and her brother Cristobal are tried together in White Plains in New York, where they both pled not guilty to over 15 charges, including racketeering, multiple variants of that, interstate domestic violence and stalking. Obviously, as May's lawyer had filed that lawsuit about the will under the slaver statute, it was later enacted when Narcy was arrested. Narcy claimed to be broke due to that and had a public defender. She had tried to get the judge to allow her to sell her wedding ring to pay for a new lawyer. The judge refused that. I'm again assuming, knowing that that money she got for the ring wouldn't go far and would lead to inevitable delays to the trial, having to re-instruct defence lawyers like a merry-go-round, which would in turn cost the state a lot of money, having to swear in jurors, discharge jurors, the prosecutors might not be available. So the judge is like, no, you're sticking with your, you know,
public defender.
Part of the evidence would be interrogation reports, and some of it was character assassination of the dead, such as Narcy telling the FBI and others that Junior was a paedophile who would give artificial limbs free to amputees in return for sex, and that he arranged sham marriages involving his exotic dancer mistresses, and that he encouraged Narcy to duct tape him and abuse him during sex. So they're kinky whichever way you look at it. One of the intriguing prosecution witnesses was the other woman. She called herself Mona Love, and she was a prostitute, tattoo artist, adult porn star, stripper. Her real name is Rebecca Bliss, and she testified that Junior paid her $600 for sex after the two met on a website for Johns and Prostitutes. Junior was immediately smitten. He sent her on a $4,000 spa away weekend, set her up in a Fort Lauderdale condo, paid for the rent, and bought her a cell phone. He gave her $10,000 in furniture and $10,000 worth of music equipment and a toy poodle. She promised to stop turning tricks, and Junior promised to divorce Narcy.
He's got a bit of a habit, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He likes his kind of women.
Yes. Narcy acted up in court and out of it. Her defence and her brother tried the same tactic with May. They said May did it. That was probably jealousy, as May had actually worked with Junior. He was her boss, and she was actually at the convention when he was killed. Plus, all that money is being left to May's sons. Narcy tried to throw her brother under the bus in a TV interview. Tried to claim Junior probably wasn't dead, as she had no evidence of it. Is overheard by court officials seemingly threatening her own lawyer, although it's never actually been revealed what she said. And it was generally, she's just all round weird. Her brother testified in his own defence, which, as we all know, never a very good idea, and tripped himself up by saying he hadn't been anywhere near any of this when the prosecution had him on CCTV taking money out of a cash point on the way to New York, and they were able to trace his steps on that long road trip. He then tried to claim that his car had been stolen, along with his cash point card and phone, and someone else did it, Gov, basically. The prosecution were also able to show that Narcy had gone with the hitman to the hotel the day before the convention to scope it out. She'd flown up with them, flown back. 10 weeks that trial took, some 250 hours, more than 4,000 pages of testimony, 40 witnesses, over 300 exhibits and 100 pages of instructions to lawyers. At the end of the trial in June 2012, Narcy refused to appear in court for the reading of the verdict when she and her brother Cristobal were found guilty of murder, conspiracy to commit murder, domestic violence, stalking, money laundering and witness tampering. She also threw a strop and got the judge to let her leave so she didn't have to listen to the sentence at a hearing when both she and her brother were sentenced to life in prison without parole in December 2012. She was 58 and Cristobal was 61. I've seen multiple different years of birth for her and ages vary, but I've gone off the prison record for that one.
That seems like a pretty intense involved case.
Yeah.
Prosecution.
Yeah.
250 hours, 4,000 pages. It's not one of these 10-minute one and done things. Oh, they didn't do it, they did it. It seems pretty complete.
It was, but it was a lot of it was repetitive. A lot of it was going through all the money stuff and it was... Narcy was just character assassination of Ben. It boiled down to almost... She was very odd with it. It was almost... I didn't do it, but if I did do it, it was his fault I did it because he was a bad person.
It's almost like pathological lying and gaslighting at the same time about someone who's dead.
Yeah. Well, that anonymous letter you asked me about, that they did find out, it actually came from Narcy and Cristobal's sister. It was the family had...
So they were aware of it as well?
Yeah, there was a lot more.
So what happened to her, do you think?
Nothing. It's a really difficult situation, is it? She wasn't part of the conspiracy. She knew about it afterwards. She felt bad about it, so she dropped an anonymous letter in to try and point them in the right direction. But how do you turn your brother and your sister in?
Isn't there certain things about that if you're married, you've got some spousal claim thing? That if your spouse commits a crime, you don't get in trouble for not telling them?
Spousal privilege. Yeah, that to a degree in certain places, but that doesn't apply because it's siblings.
Yeah, but I'm like, there is a precedent for it.
So according to another statement released by the FBI after the trial, Narcy also stole over $100,000 in cash that was collected at that convention. So I know it's Amway, but were they all handing out, you know, bundles of notes to Junior? You would have thought, I don't know, that's just odd. Mm. She laundered most of those money through bank accounts in Florida and New York.
I was going to say, it was probably money laundering. That's why it's all in cash.
Mm. Mm.
His business probably wasn't telling that either. You said he's got connections to the mob or whatever.
Well, his dad did, so I'm assuming would have known some of these
and
people were.
Again, those conferences. Oh, yeah, well, he definitely made $100K and no one turned up. And then... Because then you get illegitimate money. You say you did it to the conference. Boom, you've then laundered the money. That's how he could have made his money. Mm. Seems easier than running these conferences.
Well, Cristobal twice solicited the murder of one of the hitmen involved in the attack on Bernice in an effort to silence him.
Tried to hitman the hitman?
Yeah, he did.
Okay.
Yeah, he's not very good at hiring hitmen the first time round, is he? So, yeah. Narcy was also told by the judge to hand back that money to Junior's estate, that $100,000. May have had a bit of trouble with that, as they think it was used to pay the hitmen originally and also to hire an attorney when this all started getting serious before she ended up on public defenders because May managed to cut her money fund off. The cost of the two murders after all that. Alejandro Garcia was paid $25,500, while Joel received $3,500. At separate trials, Alejandro got 17 years and 6 months, and Joel, who cooperated and testified against Narcy and Cristobal, got 10 years. And I think he was the one that Cristobal tried to take the other hit out on because he testified against him. And Alejandro was ordered to forfeit the money he got for the hits.
What about Joel?
No, there's no mention of Joel.
Okay.
Well, he only got $3,500 anyway, didn't he? Mm-hmm. So, of course, her lawyer, after that, said that she would appeal, but I can't find anything to that effect. At the same time as the trial of Narcy and Cristobal is underway, there is a huge legal fight going on over Junior's money. All cousins from Junior's mother's side, I think. 2014, their lawyer was trying to say that the will was invalid, as Junior was bullied by Narcy into signing it. And even if he wasn't bullied, the slaver statute, which May used to stop Narcy getting her hands on the money, should also apply to May, as her sons could give Narcy money to help her with her appeal. So talk about convoluted thinking over that one. And they were obviously ignoring the fact that May and her mother are not close and May testified against her at trial. And it was actually May only got left $150,000 in Junior's will. And it did get really ugly, that try. May's youngest son needed heart surgery at this point. She was working two jobs and her older son had dropped out of college to try and help pay the bills, and she'd had another child. So the court actually released enough money to cover the heart surgery bill after, but I think after the lawyers have taken their cut, there's not going to be much left of that estate. There's never any mention of May's husband. There's never any mention of the boys' fathers, the various boys' fathers. I'm also slightly puzzled if May had always worked under Junior as his assistant in the convention business. I would have thought she would have had all that knowledge and all that contacts and could have taken either running the firm over or created a new firm with all her contacts. So why didn't that happen? You say money laundering has got me thinking, oh.
That you don't know if she was actually any competent in the first place. It could be because she's he likes her because it's his stepdaughter, child of his partner, blah, blah, blah. You don't actually know if she's any good at it. If they don't have the funds to do it, if then just because you're good at actually doing that part doesn't mean you're any good at running a business.
No, you're right.
Could be loads of reasons why.
Mm. Well, that appeal was all in 2014 and there was another appeal in 2015 and it's still going on, I believe, but I can't find anything more recent. So if it's not going, still going on, hopefully they've settled it or there's simply no money left. But I haven't quite finished. Novak Senior, remember that first adopted son he had? It was called Ronnie Novak. He was homeless and he'd lived on the street most of his life. They found him in 2009. It seemed he had suffered mental illness most of his life and had just dropped out. His father, Ben Novak Senior, had only left him that $1 in his will, had nothing to do with him. But his mother worried about him. When his parents got divorced, his mother had got given a small plot of land which had a hotel on it as part of the settlement. She'd managed to hang on to it all those years and lived off the rent as income until she died. When she eventually dies, the estate falls into the hands of a trustee, a cousin, who was assigned to disperse the estate in instalments to Ronald. So the cousin and his family begin looking for Ronald. They hired private investigators and they used all sorts of sources. Couldn't find him. They thought he was dead. The quote actually is, "We looked for him for years. We thought he'd fell into a ditch and was eaten by an alligator." Mm-hmm. But 2 days before a judge was to declare him dead, Ronald Novak surfaced at the Broward County Courthouse, walked up to a complete stranger and told him about this inheritance that he heard he was due. The stranger was a lawyer. He had doubts about it, but promised to look into it. By the time this guy confirmed that Ronald was entitled to the money from his mother's will, he disappeared again. The lawyer went public with the story of the missing homeless heir. And a few days later, on the 7th of August 2008...
That sounds like a kid's book, doesn't it?
Yeah. Ronald Novak comes forward again. Oh, you've been looking for me. There was a bit of a legal tussle with the cousin and this lawyer, but it was eventually settled amicably. Ronald's mother had created trust. She allocated her son $400 a week and $5,000 a year on the anniversary of her death. His health care and any emergency provisions are to be covered by the trust. Now, how can that be, as that income from the land had only been $30,000 per annum after taxes and she had only been dead for 8 years? It wouldn't have accumulated too much, would it? Well, the cousin wasn't daft. He'd sold the land for $7.5 million and had invested the money. Cousin was a good guy reading it, but I'll link the article because there's some serious shade being thrown at somewhere when you read between the lines on that one. Not quite, but almost the end of the tale. Ronald has joined up with the other cousins from his stepmother's side in the fight for his share of his half-brother Ben Jr.'s estate. So at the end of this week's episode, I have no idea how I feel about any of them, or at least nothing I will repeat.
That's a good little heartwarming story at the end, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where this cousin managed to sell the land, get loads of money, and then provide for then his half-brother, his cousin, but then Junior's half-brother.
But then it's the fact he then joins his cousin to try and get his hands on Ben's money, which I thought was a bit...
Well, I guess he probably feels entitled to it because a lot of it would have been his dad's money originally, wouldn't it?
Well, no.
And then it got given to Junior, though.
Yeah, but it wasn't a lot because the hotel had gone bust.
Yeah, but even then, you are going to have some sort of like almost yeah. a revenge for it.
Yeah.
But that sounds like a kid's book, the homeless yeah. heir to a hotel yeah. land thing.
Yeah.
And he comes back, psych. I hope he doesn't spend it on drugs.
Well, the more I went into this one, I'm like, when are these people going to stop? And I can't find anything else from 2015, so I don't know what's happened since 2015.
It just seems exhausting, doesn't it?
Yeah, but 6 TV shows, a film, and there's at least 2 books out on there. And I only have seen 2 British news reports on it because it just flew past us. It deals with an elite in Miami that we wouldn't be able to mentally connect with somehow. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. It's an odd one, definitely an odd one. And finally, the victims who should not be forgotten. Bernice Novak, aged 87, and Ben Novak Jr., aged 53.
So that's the end of the podcast. If you've liked it, please like, favourite and subscribe. Leave comments, reviews. Helps the algorithm, all that kind of good stuff.
Yep, come and join us on Instagram. Follow us on Twitter. We're there. You can email us. You can talk to us.
On that note, we'll see you next time. Much love. Peace.